Days until the Prospects Challenge begins for Buffalo, that is. It actually starts a day earlier. We're 27 days away from the preseason beginning against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Hi, Marty. How was your form yesterday?
Duffer, I was really good yesterday. Like, I was hitting the ball off the tee so well, slowed my tempo down. I watched Michael Pekka, you know, hit a couple of balls. I'm like, I just love his tempo. It's slow and then boom, it's releasing. And I was really good. We didn't make many putts, which was the reason why we didn't compete.
That's because you bragged about the four-footer when we got on the air
yesterday.
I know,
I bragged about a four-footer. Yeah, right. Way to go, Marty. I want to say this. So the Pekka group, by the way, which had our good friend Jen Hickok from, you know, Roswell and everything, and Ritz Jureller, our big community relations boss, I should say, had the Bulldog and Jeremy White in it. And so that foursome did really well. I saw them play a couple of holes, and they did really well. And so Bulldog and Jeremy put something on social media. And I love Ritz Jureller, and I think that will make him crack up. Is somebody zoomed in on the group picture and said, is this Brad Marchand's father? With Ritz Jureller. So I'm like, yes, like a zing on Ritz Jureller for having some resemblance to Brad Marchand, which is, it's good. Rich looks young. He looks like Brad, and there you go.
Final score for you?
6 under, I think.
Sheesh. Yeah. What is it? Man. This has not been a sterling results summer for you, despite your optimism and enthusiasm for every event.
I felt like I played really well. We had a great group, right? Led by Joe Miller of the draft room. And we had a lot of fun. We hit, so one of the guy on the group, he was disappointed last year because by the time he got to the Ted's Hot Dogs place, they had packed up and left because it was towards the end of his round.
Don't you cross over it twice though? Like,
well,
normally?
Yes, I don't know how he missed it. Maybe they were in a place where it, and so, yeah. So we hit it 3 times yesterday. Oh, we were delayed before par three. We got one. And then Tim Conley made fun of me for only putting ketchup on my hot dog. Like, I went ketchup on the hot dog. Second time around, I went ketchup on the hot dog. Then he made fun of me. So third time through, mm-hmm. I went ketchup, mustard, and relish, which I feel like that's a pretty good combination.
I mean, it's I'm not surprised that you indulged 3 times. I would have also. B, definitely not surprised that you went only ketchup because that's your thing. Always has been your entire life.
And catch up on everything.
See, if you are ever presented with this option again at a golf tournament or just going to Ted's, get the works. It's an amazing setup there, and just let them put everything on it. It's absolutely unbelievable.
So what's the works? It's ketchup, mustard, relish,
onions.
Well,
I wasn't there yesterday, so I didn't see what else they had.
I don't like pickles, so I wouldn't do the pickle across the top. I wouldn't do that.
You should.
And Shannon in the studio would probably be really angry at me right now because I always am like, oh, pickles, and she
pickles.
Laughs. But anyway, yeah.
Pickles for the win.
So that was good, and then a great time afterwards, like we all go in, have dinner, some great prizes, some auctioned items. You run into everybody else because you run into some groups on the golf course, but not just alumni, but supporter of the alumni. Some people didn't realize that, you know, this, the scholarships, right? Because this golf tournament for the Sabres alumni funds the scholarship mm-hmm. program, and we've given out over $1 million in scholarships since it first started. So that is pretty significant. And once again, this year we had a meeting in the summer. We look over all the applicants, and it's so hard to select the scholarships recipients, but it's a very, very fun thing to know that. Well, over $1 million given out in scholarships. That's great.
And as mentioned off the top, we're inching a little closer to Prospects Challenge than the preseason beginning. And of course, October 9th is the home and regular season opener kicking off the burst of theme nights that has been presented by the Sabres today.
Yeah, so it's just got released this morning. So the theme nights, which there's 6, 12, 17 theme nights, including the home opener, not too long after, 9 days after, it's Mascot Madness against the Florida Panthers. So there's going to be a Sabretooth beanie giveaway that day, but it's fun because a lot of mascots come back. There's a Bills night. There's obviously Hockey Fights Cancer.
A lot of mascots come back. What does that mean? Like, were they all here at one point and, like, moved on to, like,
greener pastures? I feel like maybe they were here for the draft or something, and they like coming back, right? Like, or, but there has been, I was in Montreal last year where they did a mascot celebration, and Sabretooth was there with Yuppie, and they actually often will have mascots from other sports.
Right.
The Minnesota Vikings mascot was in Montreal last year. We see other mascots. Obviously, we're probably going to see the Bison's mascot, the Bandits mascot. We see a lot of mascots, so that's always a good thing.
Anything else jump off the page for you? Otherwise, I just simply encourage you to follow Sabres social and go to sabres.com for the lengthy list of theme nights and giveaways this year, which, of course, let's not forget, it's an Olympic year.
Yeah, no, it's going to be, sorry, I just realized my computer wasn't plugged in
and
my screen dimmed down. And usually when your scrim goes dark, it's because you're down to like 10%. So I'm like, oh, I got to plug in my computer.
There goes the magic.
Make sure you got powered in. Yeah, so obviously February the 5th is Olympic send-off. We know that Dahlin is going to represent Sweden at the Olympics, but there's going to be, you know, maybe other ones. So we're, you know, right before the Olympic break, that's going to be happening. There's Military Appreciation Night, Pride Night. I'm looking forward to Black History Celebration later in January. And the reason I'm saying that, Duffer, is because yesterday on the show, I mentioned how I got a nice present on Sunday night from our good friend Danny Gare, a picture that he signed or whatever. So on the way to the dinner yesterday, because this alumni did not golf in the tournament but was there for the dinner, I ran into Tony McKechnie. And I'm walking in, and he goes, "Marty, I got something for you." So he reached in his pocket, and he goes, "Look what I had in my car, and I'm going to give it to you." And it is a Tony McKechnie number 9 Quebec Nordiques picture that he had in his car. And he goes, "You were talking about how you got a Danny Gare picture." And he goes, "I found that one in my console." And I was like, "Marty's going to love it." So this will be going on the bookshelf behind me somewhere, the Tony McKechnie Nordiques picture.
Was he aware of how deep your love of
Nordique
ran? Okay,
even
good.
Remember, so he wore number 9 in Quebec, and that was Réal Cloutier's number. So Réal Cloutier came to Buffalo while Tony McKechnie ended up in Quebec City. And so Réal Cloutier came to Buffalo, and I think he wore number 8, but Tony McKechnie went to Quebec and took Réal Cloutier's number, number 9. So he goes, "Hey, how about that number? Buddy Cloutier's number." And he knows that I've mentioned that when I was a kid, I had a Buddy Cloutier jersey. Number 9, Réal Cloutier. So obviously that was, you know, that was awesome.
It's funny. They swapped numbers.
They basically
swapped numbers. They were both 8 in Buffalo, and they were both 9 in Quebec.
Yeah, so it... So, yeah, so, but he knew that. He's like, "Hey, how about the number? Number 9, Buddy Cloutier." I'm like, "Yeah, I had a Buddy Cloutier jersey that by that time it didn't fit me anymore. So I didn't, you know, change the name tag or anything. But, oh, and by the way, Daryl Shannon just texted me. Daryl Shannon puts the golf event together. He does an amazing job reaching out to the sponsors, the groups, the food vendors, the gifts, everything. And the winning team yesterday, I believe, was 14 or 15 under. They were really good, led by King Kong Korab. And it was the Wester group with Paul Hafner, Chris Jones, Dennis Hartman, and Don Gleason. So that was the group that won it.
Well, Don's our guy.
Don's our guy, yes.
And,
yes,
and so is Paul, quite frankly, at least personally speaking. I know Don and Paul
You've played
a lot.
With those guys before.
Well, yeah, yes. And
did you win with those guys?
I don't think I've ever come close to winning the Sabres alumni one. Oh, maybe close, but maybe, I don't think we did. Yeah. But that was the, I think the year I played with Poopa. Maybe we were really good. I don't know.
So I played with Pooper last year and we won, right? Yeah. Like that was the thing. Like Poops was good and we had a six-some, so it helped too because we had two alumni. So
yes.
There's a
it always helps.
So the group ahead of me in the tournament was Matthew Barnaby's group, right? Mm-hmm. And they were a fun group. Every time we got there, we were joking around, telling stories. At one point, Robbery was there telling stories and it was fun. But so we were all supposed to tee off from the blue markers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that group ahead of us teed up from the blue markers more than three or four times because there was a hybrid marker that was blue and white. They mm-hmm. teed off from the blue and white a few times. And then they teed off from the back tee, the green tees, a bunch of times because I don't know if they couldn't tell the difference between the green and the blue. By that point, it had rained. There's some drinking involved. But yeah, I kept looking over to my group. I'm like, did they tee off from the wrong spot again? And they were all over the map with that, which was kind of funny.
Well, I'm glad it was a great day. I'm assuming that the weather was okay after Sabres Live completed.
We had one time where we were in the middle of the fairway and we're getting ready. And then this cloud came over and it just dumped a good amount of rain. Mm-hmm. I drove towards the green and parked underneath a tree to cover. And within 30 seconds, it was over. It's one of those like just come down. The worst was when we were on the show. I think everybody took a little break, like a 20-minute break when we were on the show because it came down gradually and then really, really hard. And that's when we took an early break. We weren't late for the break for that one, Duffer. You took an early break and we moved inside or at least in the covered area of the back porch at Niagara Falls Country Club.
Well, the weather brings about moments of pause, which is good for hot dog consumption. And you fulfilled your quota yesterday.
I had chicken wings from Filetta's and hot dogs.
No wonder you look so good today.
I had so much food on that golf course yesterday. It was amazing. I had some.
Are any of our theme nights this year, are they food related, producer Jeff? Are any of them food related? They should be. We're like a food capital, are we not? Like people love Buffalo food. Come on, let's, in those events. If it's not, then let's just create like our own food theme nights at the set during home games.
Well, okay, yeah, there is like as producer Jeff says, Thanksgiving celebration. Which we remember last year was that gravy Zamboni boat, right? And I got it on my back shelf. The gravy boat still in the box. I got to pull it out this year and use it this year. But it's going to be butter dish giveaway this year, which I think make sure you get there early so you get your butter dish to go along from last year's gravy boat.
Yes.
And it's on a Sunday, the week before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get multiple uses that week leading up to Thanksgiving dinner.
And don't forget the Black Friday game, which is as first reported, Black and Blue Friday, beat the stuffing out of the Devils. Remember that marketing slogan because you're going to hear it repeatedly as Buffalo tries to get revenge against New Jersey. And they're
wondering, like that kids takeover on January the 17th. That's always a fun night when we have junior reporters, junior PA announcers, junior social media. You know, there's a junior in-house host. That's a fun night. So kids takeover day in January this year.
He's a little older than that, ineligible for the kids takeover moments, but Consta Hellenius will be at the Prospects Challenge this year. Next week, he's also going to be in Virginia for the NHLPA Rookie Showcase, which is just a little PR stop along the way, but I always find it interesting to see which young Sabre gets selected, and it certainly makes sense that Hellenius is the representative this year. He, of course, was the youngest player in the American Hockey League last year and concluded it in pretty strong fashion. So just to go a little bit down the Sabre page here from an on-ice standpoint, is there any, before we get to our team of the day, and I'm sorry, I didn't fawn over one of your, alumni stops in
former
your NHL
teams.
Career. Your Philadelphia is our team of the day. We'll get to them. Their play hasn't warranted an hour's worth
of this. This is my last former team, though. We've already done the other two. So after
that, your elite former team, you know, the Islanders, it's going to be home for the holidays theme this year. So, I mean, that's going to make us all want to have more eggnog than usual on set. Anyway.
Over under 2.5 goals scored that game.
For whom?
Total.
Oh, no. 1-1 going to a shootout.
It was a 7-1 game last year in Long Island, so maybe they can turn that around.
All right. We'll get to Philadelphia coming up, but do you have a thought on Konstantin Helenius? And whether, because we have talked so much about the unknown in this year's Sabres forward group as far as where everybody slots. And even last week, we decided to go down the path of center wing with Tage, and depending on which day and which publication or online source you read, there seems to be still a lot of uncertainty as to what position Tage is going to play. Anyway, we'll save that again for September. What do you expect from Konstantin Helenius this season?
I was asked about him multiple times during the golf tournament yesterday.
Really?
So they're like, what do you think of Konstantin Helenius? Because a lot of fans and people that support the Sabres are thinking, oh, you could go out and trade a couple of prospects. And maybe, you know, the big question was, again, who's going to play top line left winger? And we talked about Benson yesterday and, you know, what that would be like. So they're like, oh, what if they brought in somebody and you could trade some of the prospects? But nobody, as I was doing a unscientific poll, nobody wanted to trade Konstantin Helenius. They were like, you could trade Roseanne, you can trade other people, whatnot. But Konstantin Helenius, you know, the fact that he was drafted just a year and so and change ago, that was his first year pro. He was young. You mentioned the youngest player in the AHL. And he found his rhythm. And there's a little bit of, he's not that big, but there's some nastiness to his game. He likes to push back. Not that he will be this big power forward bruiser, but he's not afraid of giving a shot, using his stick, going to the middle of the ice, the scoring areas. And I'm excited for him to be at the Prospect Challenge because I think this is going to be a chance for him to go out and dominate at the Prospect Challenge and set himself up to go into camp with a lot of momentum, a lot of confidence, and show that maybe he's a lot closer to Buffalo than what usually a 19-year-old in his second training camp would be. So that is, to me, interesting that he'll get all those opportunities, that he's been invited by the NHL. I mean, they don't just put
the NHL PA,
they don't just pull a name out of the hat, right? They kind of look around their teams and their players and they say, okay, who should we invite to that? And I think Konstantin Helenius will be a big factor in to the Sabres, you know, kind of makeup. And if not later this year, at least a call-up situation here and there. In a year or two from now, he'll be there. So that was a question I got many times yesterday. Some guys that love to go to Rochester and go to games or like really liked how Konstantin Helenius was playing last year. So that was really intriguing and fun to hear.
All right, on to Flyers.
Can I go and reach to my when I plugged in my computer because it was going to run out of battery, I dropped my books. So I'm going to duck down, grab my books right now.
Well, I can tell you this, whether we're getting into Philadelphia this segment or the next, last year's season series was not particularly successful for Buffalo against Philadelphia, save for the final night of the regular season and a narrow 5-4 win where Ryan McLeod produced one of Marty's favorite moments, which is the empty net goal that turns out to be the game winner. That was McLeod's 20th in a 5-4 win over Philadelphia, but the previous results were not good. They lost 5-2 and 7-4 to the Flyers last year, which in a little capsule might show what went wrong last year. It was those games where they just gave up way too much against a team that ultimately, like Buffalo, did not make the playoffs. The Philadelphia Flyers, Marty, have missed the postseason 5 years in a row to match a franchise-long mark. They've missed it 9 of the last 13 years and are going to have their 9th coach in the last 13 years when Rick Tocchet takes his place behind the bench. Now, that includes interims, but still, it's 9 in 13 years also.
We'll probably be 10 of 14 this season. I don't see how the Flyers, and I trust Danny Briere and Keith Jones and Rick Tocchet to move them in the right direction. And, you know, they make the Trevor Zegras trade this summer, which Zegras is going to come in. And I like that group of forward. But I look at their problems last year. They were 24th in goals per game. They were 28th in goals against. You say these are bad numbers. They really were not that bad of a team when you look at the expected goals, especially at 5-on-5. They were 13th in expected goals. Well, should have been expected goals at 5-on-5 goals for last year. And they were 6th in expected goals against last year. Mm-hmm. The problem was is that their three goaltenders were ranked 56th, 62nd, and 66th out of 66 goaltenders that played over 15 games last year. Mm-hmm. So now they were snake bitten a little bit and they had terrible goaltending. So were they that bad of a team? No, but the results were not good. They finished 16th in the Eastern Conference. They took a big step back from the year before. They fired John Tortorella in season. There was a lot of turmoil in Philadelphia, and they have to be able to overcome that next year if they want to make a, you know, a step forward and do some progress.
Interesting the way you phrase took a step back from the year before. So the reality is in each of the last 2 years, when March rolled around, the Philadelphia Flyers should have made the playoffs. Yep. So last year, on March 1st, they were a game over 500. They were just 4 points out. They won 6 of their final 21 games to finish 15 points out. And as you mentioned, last in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
The year before, on March 23rd, 3 weeks closer to the postseason, they were in a spot.
Yeah.
They were in a spot. They lost 8 in a row and won 2 of the last 11 and finished 4 points out. So it's actually really interesting trying to evaluate the Philadelphia Flyers, because 2 years in a row, it was in their hand. And if they hang on to it, you're not firing the coach again. You're probably not suggesting that their goaltending is terrible and needs a change. It's merely like growing with the team as they get into the, you know what I mean? So like, how far away are they? Really, I don't know at this point.
They're not that far away when you look at their roster. I mean, Michkov going to be like
we'll dive into the individuals a little deeper here in the next half hour, obviously.
But you look at their group of forwards. Okay, I'll just say their group of forwards. They have a lot of talent there. Okay. On defense, it's a little bit iffy. But I talked about goaltending. I think Sam Ersson is a good goalie, but when I look at the numbers and I say he was last amongst goaltenders that played at least 15 games last year in goals saved above expectations, and as a team, they gave up 37 more goals at 5-on-5 than expected. The next closest team, Duffer, was the Nashville Predators. They gave up 20 more goals than expected, but the Flyers almost gave up twice as many goals the Nashville Predators at 5-on-5 more than expectations.
Okay, this or that. What's the worst scenario to be in? Nashville giving up that many when you have UC Saros, or the Flyers giving up that many when they have a work in progress?
I feel like the Nashville Predators can probably get themselves on the better side quicker than the Flyers because of UC Saros. And, you know, so... But do I trust Andrew Brunette and the coaching in Nashville to give him the structure? Not as much as I trust Rick Tocchet and give him structure. And really, because 5-on-5, they were 6 in expected goals against last year, the Flyers. And we know John Tortorella is a big defensive structure guy. But I think that the Flyers players responded to that. As you pointed out, they were in a playoff spot or right there going into the last month of the season, last month and a half of the season, last 2 years, because they were playing well defensively, but their goaltending was so poor that it just gave them no chances down the stretch. So Vladar is going to help. He had a good season, with Calgary as the backup to Dustin Wolf, but he may have to play 40 games and Ersson may play 40 games. They may split down the middle. It's going to be about who plays better.
Well, dive into that and all positions for the Flyers. They, you know, on the best of days, look like they have potentially some impressive forward depth, but it's like every season and many teams, it does come with some questions, and they did make, for them, probably a significant acquisition in their mind in Trevor Zegras. So we'll dive into what the expectations should be for Philadelphia's top players when we come back. We want you to get involved in Hockey Fest. There's still an opportunity for you to sign up. This is the All Ages Street Hockey Tournament in conjunction with Sabres Fan Fest, which, of course, is right in the middle of the Prospects Challenge, which is fast approaching here. So it takes place on September 13th. That's the Saturday. Sabres' first Prospects Challenge game is the night before. All skill levels are welcome in this. Go to sabres.com/hockeyfest and sign up your team today. So much to talk about with the Philadelphia Flyers as far as impact players, impact coaching. We'll see next on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I am toying with the idea of a new segment called How Dumb Am I? I'm not sure.
How dumb are you? That's the response, right? Like when you do a comedy show and you ask that, you got to have the response.
Look at you, this captive audience. I love it. You're playing along already. But we do have birthdays to get to later in the show, and you know, they tend to take priority, but maybe. Stay tuned for How Dumb Am I? The Flyers are, again, 5 straight years, no playoffs. They've been close at times the last couple of years. That, honestly, Marty, that one 2 years ago when they were in the driver's seat. Oh. Dude, they maxed out at 11 games over 500 that year. They were 10 games over 500 before having the sloppy finish that featured an 8-game losing streak. And they still finished 5 games over 500. But they were sitting comfortably most of the year at 10 games over 500. And they still managed to fumble it away. So anyway, there have been players a part of that. I'm going to try to do this a little more rapid fire. Just get like your lightning responses on some
lightning of these. Lightning round. We're doing the lightning round.
So the goals were down, but the points were up. Travis Konecny had a career year. This is year 1 of 8 of his contract extension. What do you expect from him?
So what I would want to see if I'm a Flyers coach, front office, fan, is Travis Konecny hitting about 85-plus points. So we're talking about a point a game because he was at 76 last year. So I'm like, hey, you can make the jump. Go to 85 points. Get to 30 to 35 goals. He has the skill level to do it. He has the approach to do it, but it hasn't gotten there yet. So I would want him to get at least 80-plus, but 85-plus would be what I think Travis Konecny can give the Flyers this year.
As is often the case, not as short a response as I was hoping for in this lightning round. My answer would have been Konecny.
I forgot already we were doing lightning round.
Just keep doing what he's doing. He's fine. Sean Couturier, on the other hand, also has, and again, I mean, the Flyers spend to the cap, and so when the cap goes up, it's probably not going to be a concern. But he's still got 5 years to go at 7.7. And the question is, as he turns 33 in December, are we ever, and this is not a slight at all based on everything he's gone through health-wise, are we ever going to see Couturier emerge from the 40-point range to get back to the 70-point range? Or are they just going to have to, no?
No, but we did see him play almost every game last year, which is a bonus. 79 games, I think he played out of 82. That's a bonus for the Flyers and Sean Couturier. Now, could he get to 55? Yes, and will Rick Tocchet used Sean Couturier a little bit more in the role that we have seen Couturier in the past, because I think Tortorella wasn't really giving him that same look. So that to me will be a question mark as well. But I like the fact that Couturier is at least back to playing almost every game.
Owen Tippett, 27 goals, 28 goals, down to 20 last year. Any concern at all?
A little bit. Because I watch Owen Tippett, and I, even when he scored 27, you know, goals, 28 goals, I'm thinking, I'm left off with wanting a little bit more. because I think he has the ability to be a very consistent 30-goal scorer. So I'm a little concerned that it dropped to 20 last year, where I wanted more when he was only scoring, well, when he was scoring 27, 28 goals.
Trevor Zegras, RFA to be at the end of this coming season. 50 points, over, under?
Over.
Really?
I do feel that with Zegras,
bullish, as we like
Konechny,
to say,
Michkov, Tippett, I feel like you've got some talent. Also, the power play was absolutely terrible last year for the Flyers, and I think Zegras will be getting some power play looks and help make him a better power play. So I'm going to say over 50 points for Trevor Zegras.
Ty Forrester's on a really nice, tidy two-year deal at 3.75. He's gone from 20 to 25. Does he go over 30 this year?
Depends if he stays healthy all season.
Okay. And he had an elbow flare up at the Worlds. Should be good, though, for opening
should
night.
Should be good, but he's got to stay healthy all season to get to that and more.
Quietly, although the expectations were big as he was making his way into the pro ranks, Bobby Brink went from 23 points to 41 last year. Does he go over 50?
Ooh, I thought you were going to say, does he go over 45? And my quick answer would have been yes. But you decided to push it a little bit. You put a little, Frank's Red Hot on top of, the hot dog right now. So I'm like, ooh, a little spicy 50. I'm going to say he's going to get to 49, 50, but he won't go over the 50. But it would be a great season for Bobby Brink at 49 or 50 points.
We all know it takes a team, but part of me says, do any of those names matter if Michkov goes from 63 points to 90 plus? And is that likely in your mind or possible?
It's possible, but I think so. If Michkov goes to low 60s to even 75 plus, then all of a sudden, Konechny will probably get 80 plus, and all of a sudden, Zegras is going to get 50 plus because there will be some chemistry there, special teams, or maybe even playing on the line together. Or, maybe one moves over to the right side because they're both playing kind of the left. Maybe Zegras can play some center and try to see if it works. I'd like to see Michkov and Zegras together and see if there is some chemistry and some flashiness that's going to get there.
I think he gets over 80 for sure. I'm not sure about 90. Worth noting that he ended up, after all the highlight moments and, wow factor that he brought, he was fourth in Calder voting last year. He was 3-for-4 in shootouts, which was fun to watch because he's got a beautiful confidence in that discipline. And he also, and this is maybe more something to look for, is his development. Do you see him as someone who's just going to keep growing both the goals and the assists? Or do you see him more of a scorer, more of a playmaker? Because he had 200 shots, which is a pretty good total.
Yeah.
And more impressively, he ended at 13% shooting percentage, which is a really nice number to build off of. Because if you work from that 13 to 16% range, you're going to be consistently among the game's best scorers.
Where do you see that going for him? I think he's more of a playmaker.
Okay.
Upside to Michkov. And maybe it's because it made its round on social media when he was asked about, dumping the puck in and whatnot over the summer. And he's like, why would I dump the puck in and go chase it and try to get it back? I have the puck. Mm-hmm. Try to take it away from me. So, no, I don't want to dump and chase. I want to make plays. And so, to me, it's like that's a little bit of a look at how his brain thinks, right? To playmaker, to maybe draw so many players to him and find somebody open. So I think the playmaking ability of Matvei Michkov is the one side that I think can get even better.
True or false, the two names that matter most on Philadelphia's blue line are Cam York, who's 24, and Jamie Drysdale, who's 23.
True. And Drysdale, after some years of injuries, played 70 games last year. And we look back at the deal that brought Drysdale from Anaheim to Philly, right? And the Cutter Gauthier trade that apparently the Flyers were Cutter Gauthier's favorite team growing up. And then it wasn't his favorite team and he wanted out. But I like that trade, Drysdale coming over. I thought he was a really fine young, not fine young cannibals, but fine young defenseman. But I think that if healthy, we're going to see Drysdale and Cam York being the top two guys on that blue line.
I will say this. I need to see a lot more from both of them for both to live up to expectations from years ago.
The now, both of us. The both of us.
The both of them.
The both of them, yes.
But
that maybe would be my second boat. The boat of us one and the boat of them.
You're so rich. Your dinghy is called the boat of
with
them.
With all my golf now, I'm gonna go on the pro tour. I'm gonna be like Tommy Fleetwood. I'll win the $10 million grand prize.
Does Drysdale get a buddy bump from having Zegras there? Does his career take off because he's reunited with his bestie?
No, I think that. Obviously, they kind of grew up in the Anaheim organization together and everything. But I think Drysdale has to worry about one thing, and is his game, and how does he mature into the game? And Zegras really has to focus on himself. So I think, maybe they'll talk and they'll have a little bit of, the acquaintance back and whatnot. But I don't know that the buddy bump is there, really. They don't play together.
That's not true. When the Red Wings dominated, they were a five-man unit. Maybe we start seeing Tocchet employ five-man unit where Drysdale is always on the ice with Zegras.
Okay, so then you got to get five Russians because they were the Fab Five in Detroit.
Yeah, but they weren't all Russian because Dougie Brown played a lot there and they called him Brownoff, which is great.
So. When we talk about the Fab Five, it's not Dougie Brown. It's,
Yeah, but he was a part of it, and I love the guy. Anyway, most surprising or most likely to surprise in the Philadelphia crease, Dan Vladar, Ivan Fedotov, Sam Ersson, or Alexei Kolosov?
Well, I think it's most likely to surprise will be Ersson, because I still think that there's a lot of good there, and he wasn't really surrounded well, even in the crease, right? Kolosov and Fedotov really did not perform to the expectations that the Flyers had for the two of them, so they bring in Dan Vladar. Now, it's interesting to me because right now, Puckpedia says that the Flyers are only $300,000 under the cap. But Ryan Ellis is long-term IR, so they'll get a $6.25 million kind of relief from that. And they'll probably get another couple of million dollars if they send Fedotov to the minors, like if he clears waivers, because he's at 3.2 right now, so they'll get some relief there.
My instinct was to say he'll never go.
Maybe he goes back to Russia, and then you get get a full $3 million relief from there. So the Flyers could be almost a $10 million under the cap when the season starts and the roster is finalized.
Okay, so that begs the question: does that mean Sergei Bobrovsky will finish his career where it started?
No, Sergei Bobrovsky will finish and continue in Florida, because Florida has put all their eggs in the Bobrovsky basket, because they traded all the other kind of, prospect that they had coming up, then Levi and Spencer Knight and all of that. So they probably feel that Bobrovsky is going to be there for more than just this last year of his contract. I remember Bobrovsky, actually him and Ilya Brizgalov being the tandem in Philly. And when we played them in the Winter Classic in Philadelphia with the Rangers in 2012, that led to the infamous Brizgalov says, "I have good news and good news about tomorrow. The good news is I'm not going to play tomorrow, so we have a chance to win. And the other good news is I will have hot chocolate in my thermos on the bench to keep warm." Come on, Briz. But it was Bobrovsky that played in that game, which we won. That was awesome. Mike Rupp with the double Jager salute when he scored two goals in that game.
Did you play?
I played soccer before the game. I played mini sticks with Jacob on the ice the day before.
You're ridiculous.
I had a lot of fun, but no, I did not play in the game.
Rick Tocchet, how big of an impact will he have in this long, as mentioned off the top, long list of coaches they've gone through here in the last 13 years?
It's funny because most NHL teams, usually when they go to a certain coach like a John Tortorella, they like to go to the opposite type of spectrum, the next coach. Mm-hmm. They did not do that. They, you know, Rick Tocchet to me seems like a hard coach that demands a lot physically, mentally of the players, a lot of structure in his game. Like we've seen Rick Tocchet on TNT when he wasn't hired and the whiteboard in front of him explaining the X's and O's of the game. I think there's a lot of that. And I think this is a continuation of a little bit of the Tortorella plan mm-hmm. that ended a little prematurely with his firing this year. So, yeah, I'm looking at it saying Tocchet is going to be a big impact in a different way, but still having that hard coach to play for behind the bench.
Favorite memory as a Flyer?
Well, 08 playoffs, game 7 against Washington in overtime, beating the Caps in the first round, mm-hmm. then winning in 5 games against Montreal, in Montreal against Carey Price. You know, my parents were in Quebec City, which is 3 hours away, but the Montreal Canadiens have now taken over the province of Quebec. It used to be half and half, half Montreal, half Nordiques. And my dad would be going to work the week of the series, and he'd have his Flyers flag on his car, and everybody going to work would have Canadiens flags on their cars, and then he would be going to Montreal with his Flyers flags on his car. And the fact that we lost game 1 there, and my dad after the game goes, "You guys have them exactly where you want them. You're much better than them. You didn't play your best. You're going to be better." And you guys, and then we tackled 4 in a row after that, leading to game 5 win in Montreal. That was probably one of my best memory in Flyers. And my daughter Emily was born in the Washington series. I almost killed myself in my car rushing to a game because of traffic. But I made it in time. So yeah, there was a lot going on, but that 08 playoffs was fun.
I'm glad I asked the question. It's always nice to celebrate those wins along the way, and those were memorable for sure. Birthdays when we come back on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Really quick, Marty, what do you think Patrick Waugh is doing today?
Maybe meeting with Anthony Duclair.
Yes. If he's not calling Anthony Duclair and wishing him a happy birthday on his 30th birthday, then Waugh is failing again as a leader of the New York Islanders. Anyway.
I had no idea it was Anthony Duclair's birthday. I'm so glad that we are.
You and me, baby. Like, we know each other. Cole Schneider, Buffalo boy, happy birthday. Sabre for 6 games over a couple of seasons. He got his first and only NHL point November 9th, 2016 on a Nick Baptiste goal, no less, and a nicer one than what we saw earlier this summer on Sabres Live. So Cole
looks
Schneider.
Like Brian Elliott, the goalie for the Ottawa Senators that night.
No, it was Mike Condon, actually, I believe.
Mike Condon. Okay, so yeah. That was that year of Mike Condon with the Ottawa Senators.
Ottawa won in a shootout, I believe, 2-1. So.
It could be. You know what? Funny enough, so
Cole's
when we were skating in the
by
summer.
The way. Happy birthday, Cole.
Happy birthday, Cole Schneider. When we were skating in the summer, we'd go to Northtown Center. And there was always some guys, right, that would skate with us, local people, that I really didn't know. And I kept always wondering, who's that guy that had a little bit of a Thomas Vanek look in, you know, the fact that he had the long hair with some highlights and whatnot, curled. But he had Ottawa Senators stuff. And I was like, who is this guy, right? Because he had some skills to him. He was a really skilled player, flat blade, like quick shot. And so Cole Schneider was that one guy that always surprised me in the summertime.
Wayne Simmonds' birthday today as well. 37.
Wayne played more games than Cole Schneider with the Sabres.
Wayne played 7. Cole played 6. Okay. But Wayne did not win any games until the final one, which was the shootout win over Washington, the last game before COVID. So... Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately for Wayne Simmonds, you know, he got traded here at the deadline. The season ended, and that was it.
It was a tough one. Marty, thank you for the storytelling today. I think Pittsburgh is up tomorrow. Not one of your former haunts, but we'll see you tomorrow.